Married couple was having some problems in their marriage, and they finally agreed to go see a counselor. And during the initial consultation, the husband kind of took the counselor aside and just to kind of let him know of some of his perceptions of the troubles they were having. And he let the counselor know that in spite of his best efforts, his wife was a little emotionally distant and her romantic passion was waning. Well, the counselor made a note of that and said, we'll try to address that. And they made an appointment for the next week. And they returned to see the counselor. And after a half an hour or so of trying to draw both the husband and wife into the conversation, the counselor began to notice what he thought, a little bit of what the husband had been talking about. It was very difficult to get the wife emotionally engaged and get much of a response from her. Getting a little frustrated, about halfway through the session, the counselor all of a sudden jumped up out of his seat, pulled the woman out of her chair, embraced her and passionately kissed her flush on the lips. As soon as he pulled away, big old grin broke out on her face. He turned to the husband and said, I'm convinced all she needs is about three times a week is a big old kiss on the mouth. The husband said, oh dear, that's going to be a problem. And the guy said, why is that? Because I can only afford to bring her in once a week. Little chuckle there. Some of you are chuckling on the inside. You're sitting there stone-faced, haven't cracked a smile, but I know you're breaking up on the inside. You just don't want anybody else to see it. I get it. Unfortunately, marital problems, we all know, are no laughing matter. And there are many marriages across our land, in this community, even some within this church that are struggling. In fact, marriage itself is struggling a little bit in our country today. The decline of marriage is really hard to deny over the last couple of decades or so. A few years ago, Time Magazine and the Pew Research Center released a poll showing that nearly 4 in 10 Americans now believe that traditional biblical marriage, marriage as we've kind of known it and understood it and viewed it in this country for several centuries, is, quote, obsolete. And that's kind of anecdotally confirmed by a trend in our country today that is increasing every year, and that is that more and more couples are choosing to just live together as opposed to getting married. In a USA Today article dated just last October, it was reported that the number of unmarried individuals living together in this country now stands at over 15 million. And it's not just young people who are choosing to live together outside of marriage. Nearly half of that number, 15 million, are 35 years of age or older. So as the expression goes, times they are a-changing. As a nation, I think we seem to have forgotten, if we ever really knew it as a nation to begin with. And I don't know that you could really ever say what we've ever known as a nation. But if we ever did know this as a nation, we seem to have forgotten or at least been willing to move away from it. And that is that marriage is not our idea or man's creation, but it was given to us by our Creator in the book of beginnings. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, Scripture reads there about God's original intent was for a man to leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, thus becoming one flesh. God's idea then behind marriage was that a man and a woman should come together, united in their commitment to each other, and become one flesh. And really, marriage is not just about companionship, although that's important. And it's really not just about populating the world, which also is important. But really, the greater purpose of marriage, according to Scripture, is it is an insight into the relationship Jesus has with His bride, the church. Through marriage, through the relationship that we have with each other as husbands and wives, the world is to get a glimpse of what it means when Jesus and His bride come together. And so marriage really is a good thing. And as the writer of Hebrews says in the New Testament, should be honored by all. Now, in an effort to kind of turn back the cultural tide in favor of marriage, many efforts have been launched, some good, some not so good, some well-intentioned, some not so well-intentioned. Many organizations have popped up trying to reestablish the importance of marriage, not just in our country, but all across the globe. One such movement that some of you have by now seen me talk about either on Facebook, as many of you are friends of mine on Facebook, and if so, if you've checked that this week, you've probably seen me talking about this on my updates every day. If you read the bulletin this week, you've seen me talk about this already, and that is the efforts of a couple, Richard and Maria Kane, back in 1996 in England, began something that has become known now even internationally as National Marriage Week. Here is what they hoped to accomplish in starting this National Marriage Week, their own words. National Marriage Week is a grassroots movement to promote the benefits of healthy marriage to society, media, and governments, largely through churches and houses of worship. Since its beginning in 1996, National Marriage Week has been introduced to 20 other countries, including our own back in 2002. And the week of February 7th through the 14th is now known in some circles as National Marriage Week. As part of National Marriage Week, ministers and pastors and rabbis and church leaders of just about every Christian denomination you can think of are being asked today to preach a sermon and to urge married couples in their congregations to take specific steps to strengthen marriage. As one who is in favor of the biblical concept of marriage, I am glad today to lend my voice to an international chorus of voices that are urging people to reconsider the benefits of healthy marriage. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time today talking about strengthening our marriages. I have basically two objectives this morning to try and get through in the next 20 minutes to half an hour or so. And that is this. Number one, I want to share three practical steps this morning that all of us who are married, whether we're in our golden years or whether we're newlyweds, can begin doing today that I believe will put us on the road to a healthy, satisfying marriage that will last a lifetime. We're going to talk about those in just a moment. The second thing I want to do this morning is to let those of you who are married as well as those of you who are engaged, or even those of you who are just dating seriously this morning, to know about an opportunity of something you can do in the privacy and the safety and the comfort of your own home that will give you some information you might find helpful in your relationship. I'll come back to that a little bit toward the end of our time together this morning. First of all, for the bulk of our time together, I just want us to think about, what are some things that we can do, those of us that are married, or even those of us that are just in a relationship with someone, not yet married, what are some things we can do to strengthen that relationship? In a book called Stay Married for Life, the authors, Dan Seaborn and Peter Newhouse, ask the question, what does it take to stay happily married for life? Now that's a good question, isn't it? Wes and Heather, wouldn't you two like to know what it's going to take for the two of you to remain happily married to each other for the rest of your lives? Yeah. Alex, where are you? There you are. Wouldn't you and Christine like to know, when you get married, what it would take to live happily ever after? Sign you up. Exactly. Who among us would not want to know the answer to that question? If someone came to me and said, Charlie, if you'll just do this one thing, I guarantee you and Dana will be happily married and stay happily married for the rest of your lives. Do you think I would want to know the answer to that question? Sure. Wouldn't you want to know the answer to that question? What's it going to take to keep you and your spouse happily married the rest of your lives? Unfortunately, as Newhouse and Seaborn and others in this field acknowledge, there is no magic formula. As most of us who are married know, there's no magic pill, there's no magic formula that we can take that will keep us happily married for life. The truth is, marriage, at least satisfying happy married couples and marriage, is hard work. It takes effort on the part of two people to make marriage a happy, successful, fulfilling experience. Now, there may be some in here this morning who don't want to hear that. Maybe there are some, perhaps those who are not yet married, who don't want to hear how hard you're going to have to work to make your marriage work. But somebody needs to tell you, if they haven't already, somebody needs to tell a lot of these guys sitting right here and some of these guys sitting right over here and some others that are sprinkled throughout our auditorium this morning who aren't yet married, somebody needs to tell you marriage is not easy. In fact, the easiest part of your marriage will be the ceremony. Anybody can stand up here and say, I do, or I will. And it's even made easier by the fact that she's got a beautiful dress on and her hair is all dressed up and her makeup is just right and he's got a tux on and his hair is combed and he smells good. In that context, it's easy to say, I do. But here is something you need to know. There'll come a day when she won't look like she looks standing up here in that dress. And there will come a day when he won't smell like he smells up here wearing that tux with that cologne on, right? That's the easy part. Then the hard work of staying together and building a life together begins. I don't know who said it, but the first time I saw it, it really resonated with me. This idea that no one ever drifts or coasts to the top of a mountain. Having summited a mountain in Colorado and one last year in Wyoming, that statement resonates with me. No one drifts, and those of you who went on Wilderness Trek last year, whoever you may be, nobody drifts, Wes, to the top of a mountain. Nobody coasts to the top of a 13,000-foot mountain. It takes effort. It takes work. You don't just accidentally end up on top of a mountain. You've got to work to get up there. And it's very much the same way with marriage. Nobody reaches the pinnacle of happiness in marriage just by coasting or drifting through marriage. It takes effort, doesn't it? Now, we can just coast. We know what that's like. We can do that in here. We come together sometimes on Sunday mornings in the name of God. You come in here, you've done this, I've done this, we have to work against it. We come into a place like this, we sit down, everything is in habitual order, and it is easy just to set our minds and go through this without any real thought or involvement or passion at all. We come in, we take our seat, we go through our motions, we leave, that's it. Many of us know what it's like to coast through an assembly like this. And likewise, some people are coasting through their marriage. They might never get a divorce. They might never get a divorce. But that doesn't mean their marriage is thriving. In fact, they may just be surviving. Now, fortunately, when two people are willing to work at it together, marriage can be a great experience, as many of us can testify to. But it does take work. And while there's no magic formula, while there's no one guarantee, if you do this, you'll never divorce. Your marriage will always be happy. I don't think there's anything like that. That I can say to you this morning, if you'll just do this, then you'll be on the road to marital bliss. But there are some things we can do that will put us on the road, at least, to staying happily married for life. No promises, no guarantees, things happen. But there are some things we can do, some actions we can take, some steps we can take, that I believe will at least keep us on the road to staying happily married. In this book that I mentioned earlier, the authors identify what they believe are 9 steps that married couples can take that will help them stay happily married for life. I don't have time to do 9 steps this morning. I really don't have time to do 3, but I'm going to try to do 3 real quick here in the next few moments. From their 9, I've taken what I believe are their best 3, and I want to share them with you this morning. If you want the other 6, you can either go buy the book, or you can ask me if you can borrow mine. Or you can take the class the next time we offer Stay Married for Life class. But it may be a while because we offered it twice last fall. So you may have to wait a while for that. But here are three practical steps that those of us who are married, or even just those of you who are in a relationship with someone, maybe you're engaged, you're heading toward marriage, or maybe you're just dating seriously, these steps will also apply to you as well. Number one, create a cherishing environment in your relationship. In their book, Seaborn and Newhouse talk about how everyone has something in their life that they cherish. Maybe it's a family heirloom that's been passed down from generation to generation. Maybe it's a gift that someone gave you years ago that you cherish. Whatever it is, we all have something probably in our homes that we value, that we cherish. In the book, one of the authors talks about a basketball that he has that was signed by Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, and Larry Bird, four of the greatest NBA players ever. He keeps this basketball in a glass case up on a shelf in his den. And he talks about how when his buddies come over, they never take that ball down to go out and play a game of pickup basketball in the driveway. And the reason they don't do that is because he values that ball. He values the names that have been signed on that ball. He knows that ball is valuable. And so he's not going to take it out of that case and dribble it on the driveway and mess up those names. So he protects that ball. He keeps it in a glass case on his shelf. And you can't just walk in and take that ball out and play with it. Now, they go on to make the point in their book, how much do you cherish your marriage? How much do you cherish your partner? How much do you cherish that person you're in a relationship with? How much is your marriage worth to you? How much is your spouse worth to you? What do your words and your actions communicate to your spouse? Do your actions communicate to her that she is a treasure, that she is valuable, that you cherish her and your relationship with her? Or do your words indicate that you devalue him, you don't cherish him or the relationship that you have with him? Paul in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29 says we are to let no unwholesome talk come out of our mouths, but only that which is good for building others up. We apply that to this relationship. Why would we not apply it even more to this relationship? The individual that we spend the most time with. Why would I say something that builds you up and then go home and say something that tears my wife down? Why would I try to say something that builds you up but then go home and say something that tears my husband down? And so they talk about at length creating an atmosphere in our relationship where our spouses are cherished, where through our actions and through our words, we communicate to one another that outside of our relationship with Christ, you are what's most valuable in my life. What kind of atmosphere are you and your husband, are you and your fiance, are you and your serious boyfriend or girlfriend creating? Is your relationship one in which the other is valued, where they are cherished? Or are there things going on in that relationship where others are being invalidated or devalued. I don't know if that communicates anything to you or not. I debated about whether to do this or not because it takes a little bit more time, but I want to share with you how they describe an atmosphere that invalidates or devalues the other person. Listen to what they say. Invalidations are behaviors that take value away from people. They span a broad range, including what we do, what we say, what we don't do, and what we don't say. For example, rolling your eyes, glaring, name-calling, using curse words or sarcasm toward your spouse, that's invalidating your spouse. That's devaluing your spouse. Creating uncomplimentary nicknames, criticizing your spouse's weight, appearance, skills, mocking his or her intelligence, ridiculing your spouse's friends, family members, occupation, belittling your spouse's beliefs, projects, or creations, insulting your spouse by saying, "You're just like your mother," or "You're just like your father," suggesting that as a couple, your social status doesn't measure up to others because of your spouse. Commenting positively to your wife about another woman's appearance. Commenting positively to your husband about another man's appearance. Slamming a fist, kicking a wall, peeling out of a parking lot, slamming a door, standing over your spouse, throwing an object, intimidating, immobilizing your spouse, slapping, hitting, punching, shoving, kicking your spouse, assuming the worst or expecting the worst from your spouse, using "you always" or "you never" in a conflict or an argument, neglecting to notice how well your spouse is doing or how hard they are trying, rehashing old arguments or mistakes, refusing to listen or hear a spouse's comments, not reciprocating when a spouse offers affection, rejecting the sexual advances of your spouse, failing to verbally express pleasure in your spouse, isolating yourself from your spouse physically, or disconnecting emotionally. If those things are going on in our relationship with each other, something's wrong. Something's wrong. That's an atmosphere where someone is being invalidated. Someone's not being cherished. Someone's not being lifted up, but they're being kept down and driven down. If we want a better marriage, if we want a better relationship, if we want a healthy future marriage, we need to start now building an atmosphere where those individuals within that realm of influence are valued and cherished, not invalidated and devalued. So that's number one. Begin working today on doing and saying things that value and cherish your relationship so that those within it know without a doubt, I'm important to him. I'm important to her. They value me. They treasure me. That's a good step toward getting on the road to staying happily married for life. Number two, spend meaningful time together. As couples, we're either growing closer to each other or we're drifting apart from each other, right? I mean, it's really only two options because coasting is not really an option. Coasting is just slow drifting. So we're either going somewhere, we're either going where we want to go, or we're drifting, we're coasting, and we're falling behind. And one of the things that helps us move forward is spending meaningful time together. Ephesians 5:16, Paul says, "Make the most of your time for the days are evil. That certainly applies to our relationship with our spouses or our significant others. How we use our time, spending time together, and how we use the time when we're together either pushes us down the field or allows us to digress and move back in a negative direction. As part of National Marriage Week, one of the things that ministers like me have been asked to do whenever we address this topic from the pulpit is to encourage people to do something that may sound silly and may sound like, well, that's not really all that important, but anyway, we're going to encourage you to do it, and that is to do something that all of you did before you got married, but that many of you have not done since you got married, and that is to have a date. Go on a date like you did before you got married. Find a babysitter if you've got kids. It doesn't have to be anything fancy or expensive. It can be if you want to make it that way, but doesn't have to be. Just spend some time with your partner and act like you did before you got married. You know what I'm talking about. Put on some cologne. Put on that nice outfit that he likes. Open the door for her when you get out at the restaurant. Laugh at his jokes. You know, like you used to do before you said, I do. And then all of a sudden we quit doing all those things, right? See, I knew this day was coming. So I've been opening the door for Dana for about the last couple of weeks. A couple of weeks ago, she asked, why are you doing that? I said, well, I'm preaching a sermon in a couple of weeks. I don't want to be a liar. Didn't I? Yeah. Why don't we stop doing the things that we did before we got married after we get married? I want to challenge you. If you're a friend on Facebook, I've already challenged you to do this. Steve and Maggie have already done it. Paul and Virginia, I think, have already done it. According to Virginia, I don't know if Paul knows that or not, but they had their date. They ate pizza and watched the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. Go on a date this week, you and your spouse. Do something. Go for a drive. Go for dessert. Go to a movie. Go walk around Walmart. It's about all we can do in Murray. Not a lot of options there. Spend some time together. Eat, talk, and play. Spend some time together doing those things. That'll put you on the road to staying happily married for life. Real quickly, number three, build spiritual fusion in your relationship. Listen to what these authors say in their book. Although many Christian couples are good at inserting religious elements into their wedding ceremony, a prayer here, a hymn there, the love chapter embossed on their program, many have not worked to incorporate God into their marriage. In fact, they say, for many couples, the wedding ceremony encompasses the only spiritual notes their marriage will ever play. That's good. A lot of us made a big deal about having a Christian wedding. We got married in a church, made sure we had a preacher do it. Maybe we had some religious music, had 1 Corinthians 13 embossed on our wedding program. We had prayer. And what they're saying is, unfortunately, in some marriages, that's the only time faith really plays a role in their marriage. I want you to envision a triangle. Two people, one here, and God up at the top. The more we align our lives with God, the more spiritual fusion we create in our relationship, the closer we both get to God, the closer we both get to each other. See, we start out here, and the closer we get to God, the closer we get to each other. Don't make your wedding ceremony the only time your marriage plays a spiritual note. Pray together. Attend a Bible class together. Participate in a life group together. Make some Christian friends. Go on a mission trip. Get involved in a ministry that you feel passionate about. Don't just make your ceremony religious. Make your life as religious every day. Create spiritual fusion in your relationship. As you seek a closer relationship with God, that brings the two of you closer together as well. So three things, simple, we can all do today, whether we're in our golden years or our newlywed years, whether we're engaged or whether we're just dating. Start creating a cherishing atmosphere. Spend good time with each other and create spiritual fusion in our relationship with each other. Again, no magic bullet here. No promises, no guarantees. But these are things we can do that'll put us on the road to strengthening our marriages and staying happily married for life. Now, I said I wanted to do also one final thing real quickly. Let me add this as well. On the tables, our information tables, as you leave today, you'll find a brochure that looks a little bit like this. You go to get your car checked up. You go to get your body checked up. You go to have your teeth checked up. Why not also get a couple checkup? Through an organization that Richard and Wes and I and even some others in this congregation who've been involved in full-time ministry before are associated with and well aware of, called Prepare and Enrich. And in conjunction with National Marriage Week, you can go to a website and for the cost of one meal, the magic $19.95, you can have an assessment of your relationship, whether you're married, engaged, or dating. And you'll get a wealth of information that will help you strengthen that relationship. It'll identify your strengths. It'll identify some growth areas and give you feedback as to how you might improve those growth areas and continue strengthening those strength areas. Dana and I did it last night. Took us about 30 minutes, 15 for me, 15 for her. We've now got a 19-page feed out with information that we can sit down and talk about and use to evaluate our relationship. It's not a test. You can't fail. It just assesses your relationship based upon the answers you provide and gives you recommendations on how you might strengthen your relationship. There are brochures on the tables as you leave today. For this week only, National Marriage Week, this company has discounted this program from $35 to $19.95. If you do it this week, you get that discount. If there are brochures are gone, all you need to remember is www.couplecheck.com. www.couplecheck.com. You'll have all the information you need at that site to get a couple checkup, and then the information you need to kind of work on your marriage. How can we help you today, either in your marriage or your relationships, your relationship with Christ? Whatever we can do, pray for you, counsel with you, let us know. Our shepherds will be at the exits, the ministers, at least one of us will be down here. We want to assist and bless you in whatever way we can this morning in your relationships, in your life, and in your walk with Christ. Let's stand and bless each other before we leave. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and give you peace. Amen.